This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, my name is Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. And the morning run takes you from 6 o'clock in the morning all the way to 10 o'clock with a range of interviews, news and analysis. It is the 24th of May. We're coming up to the end of what is going to be a historic month. In the calendar of this, or in the timeline of our nation, Malaysia.
You wouldn't happen to be talking about GE14, would you?
No, I'm not just kind of alluding vaguely to it. Yes, of course. Yeah. You know, some media are branding their content now around the idea of a new Malaysia.
Yeah.
It's quite fascinating they're doing that.
And I want to see how long of a shelf life this term, new Malaysia, has, right? Because it won't be so new, I don't know, like a few months in or a year in, right? But certainly enjoying it while it lasts. But I want to see, you know, like how long we can keep this new Malaysia concept going. Certainly as a replacement for Satu Malaysia. But yeah, new Malaysia.
Well, yes, how long the momentum can last, as well as the news flow. I mean, the news flow is still going on strong, though. The amount of things that are coming out every day still.
Yeah, on a daily basis, yeah. Multiple headlines, right? So I'm wondering about what the editors in newspapers are going for. They seem to be on the same page when you look at the newspaper front pages, right? They all seem to choose the same story, but I can see actually multiple options for that front page.
Well, I saw what you did there. They're all on the same page. Yes, I get it. Well, that's
yeah. Right. Okay, so the low humor there, yeah. You know, that's not changed. It might be a Malaysia Baru, but it's a Han Lama.
First of all, you were the one who was saying the same page. But anyways,
okay.
Moving on.
Okay. So quite a bit of, you know, because the world has carries on and it's, you know, sunrise, sunset on many things, including individuals. Philip Roth, the author who scandalized Middle America. I read one of his books, Portnoy's Complaint, when I was at university. He passed away at the age of 84, I believe.
Yeah, and despite his storied career, yet he was not awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature, right? Go figure, he has written more than 30 novels on a whole range of topics from sex, death, art, politics, human weakness, imperfections, etc. Yeah.
You know, Joyce, are you a big fan of the novel? You know, is that something you turn to for entertainment?
Yeah, depending on the what kind of novels.
So, who are your favorite novelists?
I like. It's very, very chit lit kind of novel.
Chick lit. Yeah.
Chick lit.
Yeah, and you're like, calling them novels. Okay, go on.
That's a massive eye roll by Sharad,
right?
So tell us your favorite authors.
Not going to. You're going to be all judgy. So I'm like, yeah.
So you moved away from Mills and Boons, did you?
Yeah,
so
yeah. But one of my favorite ones are like Sophie Kinsella. I also like Tony Parsons. And yeah, a couple of those. But I'm
are
not
they
sure.
About to win the Nobel Prize? Well, Philip Roth didn't. I don't know if any chick lit author is ever going to win a prize. But
who knows?
Why not?
It could be. Yeah.
They bring joy to people and the love of the written word. I think that is special. Han, you were saying that because you spent some time in the U.S., mm-hmm. You know, did the people around you, were they big readers?
Yeah, well, I guess what we were discussing earlier before we got on air was that when we mentioned Portnoy's Complaint, I was like, well, I got a couple of friends in college named Portnoy. That's the extent of my familiarity with Philip Roth. The kinds of books I tend to read are what involve, like, say, current affairs,
non-fiction mostly.
Yeah, non-fiction. You know, so, for example, a couple of books I'm trying to get through now, if I have the time, would be still Yanis Varoufakis's Adults in the Room. I'm still making my way through
that. Is
that
my copy?
No, I bought my own. Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah. We need my copy.
There's one that I'm currently reading right now is The Art of Not Giving a
Bleep.
Yeah, and then it's pretty good. You should go check that out. I like nonfiction as well.
Yes, so do I. So, well, we'll be back with a look at how creative people can get on social media and chocolate. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, the Doobie Brothers would listen to the music. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. And of course, a lot of people in this country having to face the music for all kinds of potential misdeeds that they committed in the last couple of years. Some misdeeds are bigger than others. Police officers accused of taking chocolate out of the refrigerator of former Prime Minister Najib Razak, because came in for quite a bit of criticism not least from the Najib Razak himself. But apparently, the former Prime Minister is not getting much sympathy, and there's quite a bit of sympathy being drummed up for those police officers.
Yeah, so a number of people have come out to the social media to say, you know, how could he say this? And I think one of them was a lawyer activist, Siti Kasim, and she said that, you know, when it came out, I felt strongly about that. And she organised a Facebook event to deliver chocolates to the police station on Saturday. And that has drawn thousands of comments and promises to participate on that.
Yeah, and the campaign even has its hashtag, Chucks for Cops.
Ah.
Yeah, go figure. Yeah, you know, going back to the, I guess, the initial complaint from the former Prime Minister, it does seem, well, it is rather petty, right, to be complaining about having chocolates being taken without your permission from your personal fridge. You know, I mean, granted, everybody loves to keep hold of their personal stash, be it chocolates or cash. But, you know, given the mountains of cash and jewelry that was found within his residences, yeah, it does pale in comparison. Harrison, right? Those chocolates.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, but it does make you think that, you know, we are in an era where people expect high levels of professionalism.
Sure.
On all sides. Mm-hmm. But because there's also a question of context and, you know, what drove those hungry police officers or chocolate-loving police officers into the refrigerator. You know, maybe they were looking for hidden... Who never know, you know, because...
It's part of an investigation.
Right. Soft-scented chocolates might be a great place to hide a jewel or two, don't you think?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I asked you about your preference for, you know, in terms of books earlier, Joyce. What about chocolates? Do you like the soft-scented chocolates?
I love chocolate. I love chocolates. All
do you
sorts.
Like the one with the nuts?
I'm all sorts. Any kind of chocolates, I love it.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm asking for your choices.
Yeah.
You know, you get to a box and there's a box of chocolates. Do you go for the soft-scented ones or the ones with nuts, hun?
Well, with Forrest Gump saying, you know, you can't tell which kinds you have. But personally, I would be much more overjoyed when I get the soft-scented.
Hold on a second. If you're literate, you can tell because these boxes of chocolates often they come with a guide and they'll tell you that's got, you know, cherry brandy in it or that has, you know, strawberry.
My favorite is a dark chocolate. I'll go for the dark chocolate one.
Okay,
first.
So chocs for...
How about yourself? Sure.
I like the soft-scented ones, but you're right. I mean, when anything with chocolate is great. So, you know, but when I get those boxes, I do go for the soft-scented ones. The issue really, I guess, here is, you know, why is there so much support for the police? And, you know, would you participate in a Chocs for Cops, you know, campaign?
Well, perhaps not. I mean, I can see the fun in it. And by all means, if you guys are going to give chocolates to your good old neighborhood cops, by all means, go right ahead. But I think this is not for just any cop. It's specifically for the guys at Bukit Aman, or is it just any cop? I'm not sure.
We have to read up on the event.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyways, look, because there is still that common enemy, so to speak, right? That being Dato' Sri Najib. And look, for lack of better terms, he's become this easy punching bag now that he's out of power, right? So, you know, there is that commonality there which allows for these expressions, these campaigns, chucks or cops or not. I mean, even looking at all the memes that have come out online, right? So it's become this easy target and people are indulging in this newfound freedom, so to speak.
Yeah, since we're talking about Dato' Sri Najib, the news flow that has come out is that 109 million ringgit in cash and 200 million ringgit in luxury items have been taken from the premises linked to him. This is what's come out so far.
Well, you know, I kind of disagree with you, Han, about the newfound freedoms, because I think when it comes to social media and memes that either mock Najib Razak and his wife, Rosma, this was happening long before. I mean, it's been happening for a decade or so now. And I think what's important to note is that today, perhaps, we're much more open about talking about it. So, like, us on national radio are willing to talk about it, you know, and to indulge in conversations about these memes and so on and so forth.
Right, and actually, we are in agreement there. I apologize for not perhaps being clearer, but yeah, obviously, those memes have been there online, but you have certainly noticed a ramping up of these expressions, be it memes or Chucks for Cops campaigns. And I just checked out on their Facebook page. It is specifically for those at the Bukit Aman headquarters.
Now, you know, the reform agenda is going to affect the police officers as well. If you remember during the administration of Abdullah Ahmad Badawi, he had that Royal Commission on the Police. They had over 130 recommendations. Almost none of them, I believe, were put in place. And there was said to be some resistance from the police force. Now, Muhyiddin Yassin, as Home Minister, is saying he is going to look at instituting some of the recommendations, I think, that were surfaced during, that were in that report from the Royal Commission. So they might not be that happy this time, you know, looking at institutional reform. So that's something to keep a look at. We'll be back with a look at those institutional reforms. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Prince with Raspberry Beret. Prince, of course, is passed away a couple of years ago. I can't remember exactly when he died. Do you
remember? Let me try and find out for
2016, you. 2016. Yeah. Okay, Raspberry Beret. I'm sure I could with me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. And it's time to look at, because the government of the day, under intense scrutiny after the May 9th polls, which brought them to power. Intense scrutiny also because of the, I guess, the alleged misdemeanors of the previous administration. And I think a lot of people don't want those mistakes to be replicated, including the shape of a government, the type of governance we've had, and so on and so forth. What thing that we do note is that there have been announcements of several task force to assist the current government in their reform agenda.
Yeah, that's right. So you've got, say, for example, a 1MDB committee, 1MDB task force, and also now you've got Deputy Prime Minister Wan Azizah saying that another task force has been set up to deliver Pakatan Harapan's promises, right? So there is now a question about whether that is one task force or one committee too many.
Do you think they have to set all these up because of the number of things they have to look into? And if you set up a task force, each task force will have a more defined role and defined focus in a way? As in, like, what is the end game for this task force? You need to figure out what Pakatan Harapan's, but the one that Deputy PM set up was to deliver Pakatan Harapan's promises. If a 1MDB task force is set up, it's to look into 1MDB. What other task force are there?
Yeah, so I think what is interesting in this particular task force is that it's very broad, and it has to do with the manifesto, and it has to do with promises of the 100 days. Now, I personally think when somebody announces a task force, because of the limited remit of that task force, the idea is that what are they supposed to achieve? What kind of report card? And I'm assuming this is a task force that's going to produce a report card on the delivery of those promises. And and who's going to be sitting on that task force? And more importantly, is this something that could be best done by those outside of government? So I'm thinking whether an NGO-led or academic-led committee to follow Pakatan Harapan in the first 100 days, along with the media, is what is probably better in dealing with the big picture of their promises.
That's a good point, Sharad. Actually, did they mention that it has to be from the government, or the task force could be from people outside of the government? I don't think they
We already see their style, right? Their style is, in fact, to induct people from outside of government, outside of political parties. Yeah. You know, you look at the composition of the Council of Eminent Persons, for instance.
Right, but then at the same time, if you're going through, I mean, just to give the other side of the argument, right? So if you're looking at some of these promises, say abolish GST, well, that appears to have been done via the Ministry of Finance or / Customs, right? The petrol subsidies, right? PTPTN under the Ministry of Education. So, you know, why isn't it that these promises aren't fulfilled via these ministries, or at least the ones that are really set up, as opposed to having these task force? On top of that, so for example, there have been plenty of questions out there, which, to be fair, the members or the leaders of these task force or committees have responded to, There have been questions about the potential overlap. So, for example, just yesterday, you've got Tan Sri Abu Talib Othman, who is the member of the 1MDB committee, who has to come out and say, and reassure people, no, there are no overlaps between the 1MDB task force and the 1MDB committee. So you've got a committee and a task force tasked into looking into 1MDB on top of what the Ministry of Finance is doing, right? So there are questions out there being posed by members of the media, but are there any potential overlaps? Mm-hmm. We want there to be an efficient government.
Yeah, and I think, when you look at something like monitoring the 100-day promises, that I think for internal consumption purposes, of course, this government is going to have to make sure that they can say at the end of 100 days and answer questions posed by members of civil society, the larger public, and also the media as to whether they delivered. But the monitoring of kind of political promises, especially kind of writ large in terms of a manifesto, I think it's best done by civil society, by independent voices. Because it's not just ticking boxes. You also want to ask how that was achieved, in the nuances in each of those promises, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, right. You want to make sure that it's achieved well and not just to tick the box, right? Whether or not you're just rushing to tick the boxes and whether there'll be a good outcome from that. That's a good point, right?
Yeah, and I think also if you look at, the question of what's happened before, so much, and I don't know if Pakatan Harapan has this in its manifesto, which is, over 100 pages long, the dismantling of the structures of bad governance that we've had. I mean, we've had bizarre revelations of secret organizations, with 300 people in it. We've had numbers about the number of political appointees, 17,000 people. This is all part, and one of the things that the Prime Minister has announced, the dissolution of the JHKP, which was kind of like a parallel system, that was set up by the federal government in states that they did not control.
Was that the National Council of Professors?
No. The National Council of Professors, one thing. This is the Jawatan Kuasa Kampung.
Oh, right.
P.
Yeah. Okay.
So this was a way of circumventing already existing structures because they were no longer in the control of the Barisan National Government.
Yeah, I mean, we recall with the previous government, there are plenty of accusations about it being bloated. No, so this is a severe attempt to right-size it, right? But at the same time, you've still got this. Some might say, well, this is a bit petty, but, there are those concerns out there, and there have been plenty of real estate, at least in the digital media, be The Edge, Malaysia Kini, etc., about those very concerns. Could there be unnecessary overlaps between, say, the Ministry of Economic Affairs or Ministry of Finance, 1MDB Task Force?
What about the Malaysian External Intelligence Organization? Oh, yeah. Was that an attempt to outsource intelligence?
We already have like those kind of like special branch and intelligence unit. So when this came out, everyone's like, what is this Malaysian External Intelligence Organization looking into? Apparently, it's an intelligence agency under former Prime Minister Dato' Sri Najib Razak.
Were they as cool as the James Bonds out there? Oh, not really.
And who were they watching?
You. Okay, we're going to give you the last word, Joyce. Not quite, because Elvis Presley takes over from you, and he's going to be taking us all the way up to the first bulletin of the morning with Patch It Up. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the late Elvis Presley with Patch It Up. I'm sure I'd couldn't with me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. And the question, I guess, for all of us, and Elvis just asked it, can we patch it up? Can we patch this ship of state up? Because it's leaking in many places, and for a lot of critics, it was actually threatening to go down. Now, if you remember the meeting yesterday, it was quite well telegraphed between Robert Kwok, a member of the Council of Eminent Persons. He met with Tun Dr. Mahathir. He saluted him.
Yeah.
And then he shook his hands and said, "You saved Malaysia." Mm. And they said, "Oh, and also with Diem," he said. Yeah, I mentioned that. Yeah.
Because, they are good. I mean, if you saw those pictures, there was a full bloom bromance going on between Tun Diem and Robert Kwok there. They were holding hands as they walked down that corridor together.
It's very interesting that you call it a bromance. Actually, in an earlier time, this is not unusual for men to hold hands in that way. It's not a sign of because, you know, especially in Asian societies, men do hold hands.
Well, fine. Robert Koch might be in his early 90s and Tun Daim in his latter years as well, but I'm still going to use the 2018 term of bromance. Thank you very much.
Well, okay. We've had quite a bit of a discussion here on the question of task force, and we asked you to tweet in or WhatsApp in. Well, Peter Bellew, former CEO of Mars, has tweeted and saying, Pakatan Harapan seems to be choosing world-class people to sit on these task force. With such ambitious targets in the first 100 days, they will need all the help they can get. So I say, go for it.
Yeah, you know,
that's Peter Bellew.
And we know that Peter Bellew is a loyal listener. He listens to BFM even during his travels all around Europe. I think he was in Luxembourg recently. So now, given his position at Ryanair, I think he might need to make a trip down to Malaysia again to be on the Breakfast Grill, I think.
Okay, you know.
Open invitation there, Peter.
Okay, talking about the ship of state, and tossing out the water that might have accumulated in the hull or whatever, to go with that metaphor. Perhaps a bit of deadwood to clear from the decks as well. Prime Minister announced that the government is terminating several agencies, including the Land Transport Commission, SPAD, as well as the Special Affairs Department, or JASA as it's known. Now, to get an understanding of the implications of the termination of SPAD, we spoke to Ajit Joel. He's the president of the Malaysian Public Transport Users Association. We asked Ajit about the possible or perceived inefficiencies of SPAD.
Well, it took them some time to get the e-hailing act up and ready, more than 2 years, and I believe till now it has not been gazetted yet. So that's a clear-cut inefficiency in terms of the users. They should have done this from the day of inception. Increasing the tariff for taxi drivers smack on the April 1st, 2015, on the same day GST was launched, that almost single-handedly wiped out the entire taxi industry to a large extent, compared with rideshare industry coming in super strong. Then if you look at the public express bus industry, which is still a total mess, where express bus have accidents, their investigations are sloppy, and till today, a lot of cases have not been fully published or documented. So these are the things that make users wary of public transport. Now, if you want public transport to move from a last choice to a preferred choice, regulation must be clear-cut, regulation must be tough, and there has to be a ton load of transparency in it. So without these things in place, SPAD was just becoming a bit tough to manage.
Now, we've asked Ajit as well about the remit of SPAD versus Transport Ministry, and I think going forward that's going to be a very interesting issue as well.
Interesting question. It's a yes and a no. Yes, it was always under SPAD, but we had instances where, for example, if I remember correctly, GoJet, it was the public transport or the ride share that was using motorbikes, was banned by the deputy minister at that point of time. So how does that take place? I too do not know. How can ride share industry be legal for cars but become illegal for bikes? So when you had flip-flop policies like that, the people's confidence in the government of the day at that point of time and in commissions starts becoming questionable. Policies have to be clear. Regulations have to be tough. You cannot be tutup sebelah mata environment.
That was Ajit Joel, president of the Malaysian Public Transport Users Association, on his response of the dissolution of SPAD.
Yeah, so interesting. You can see that what the current government is doing is they're looking at duplications. Perhaps if they can put one, like in this case, transportation under one department, they're doing that. And if you look at SPAD's website, what we do, SPAD plans, regulates and enforces all matters relating to land public transport and has jurisdiction over Peninsula Malaysia. So that's what they're
saying. It's quite limited, and it's limited to Peninsula Malaysia. Mm.
Right, and also, you know, how much more involvement the new transport ministry, or rather the current transport ministry, will have, how much engagement will they have with civil society? Right now, we have heard comments from the Malaysian Public Transport Users Association. Hopefully, there'll be a lot more engagement there, you know, because obviously, as rightly pointed out by Ajit just now, there are plenty of issues that affect the land transport industry here in Malaysia. Malaysia. Actually, it's not just land, even aviation as well, right? We have seen this very high-profile beef between the likes of AirAsia and MAHB. You know, MAVCOM is there. Will MAVCOM be next in the firing line? Who knows?
Well, you know, we did ask ask you what chocolates you would give to the cops. We've had quite a few tweets here. Chocolate Tora or Deng Deng.
Oh,
Deng
Deng.
Ding Dang.
Ding Dang.
Ding Dang. Ding Dang. Chokey Chokey.
Oh, Chokey Chokey.
Okay,
yeah.
So you can keep those comments coming on the question
Classics.
Of the Chocs for Cops campaign. Stay tuned. We'll be back. State BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Beach Boys with God Only Knows. I'm Shahid Kutin, with me, Tan Cheng Han and Joyce Goh. What I think we do know is that the government of the day thinks it knows what it's doing, and it's making substantial moves in terms of policy. And we have one just yesterday that included the announcement that cabinet ministers would be taking a 10% pay cut from their basic salary with immediate effect. He also said that the annual pay rise for civil servants scheduled for the 1st of July will be reviewed. He said that the government of the day, the Pakatan Harapan government, is not bound by promises made by the previous Barisan National Administration. Now, we spoke to Professor of Political Economy at the University of Malaya, Terence Gomez, and asked him about his thoughts on Tun's first official policy move.
Well, that is a good move on his part for the simple reason that there has to be a major trimming exercise in terms of how we're going to deal with the public sector expenses, which is a huge segment of the budget. So this is a first start, a good first start.
We then ask him if he thinks this policy will eventually go beyond the cabinet ministers and perhaps extend to all ministries as well.
He should start with the cabinet, but he's also alluding to a major issue, the fact that there is a need now for public sector reform. The public sector is just a huge bloated bureaucracy, and that will also have to be part of his cost-cutting exercise.
We also asked him if he thinks we should do away with the post of deputy ministers completely.
Well, if you look at the previous administration, they had about 25 cabinet ministries. We don't need 25 cabinet ministries, and we definitely don't need 25 deputy ministers and parliamentary secretaries. So while the pay cut is the beginning of the trimming exercise, what Mahathir should do, and to be fair to him, he already did say this, we don't need such a huge cabinet.
We asked Professor Gomez if he thinks that the austerity measures might affect the economy at large and if cost-cutting policies are the way forward.
It's a beginning. It's about how we deal with the budget. We will have to trim the budget in terms of expenditure for the public sector expenses. As I said, this is a start. It will take a long time to deal with the issue of public sector reform. And we're talking about 1.6 million employees. So the implementation of this exercise will take some time.
And that was Terence Gomez, Professor of Political Economy at University of Malaya. I mean, one of my first thoughts when I read this news is, you know, to what extent the incoming government needs to stabilize its support among the civil servants. And, you know, and if you look at what Pakatan Harapan did in both Penang and Selangor, they did really try very hard to win over the support of the civil servants, at least in their first term. It was very hard to be tough coming in because without their cooperation, they can stonewall you. They can do all kinds of things. They can sabotage your policies, you know, by, you know, not really doing what they say they should be doing.
Right, exactly. And when you look at the Selangor government level, right, and with the plethora of bonuses that were announced for civil servants, you almost saw this like-for-like announcement being made by then Selangor MP Azmin Ali versus what then Prime Minister Dato Sri Najib was announcing for civil servants as a whole. It was almost like a race to the top or bottom, or depending on how you look at it, right? You know, a race to outdo each other when it comes to how much they lavish upon their civil servants. But now with these cost-cutting measures in the name of making government more streamlined, Well, from an economic perspective, or at least from a fiscal perspective, yeah, that's great, right? But you've got to look at the human element as well. You know, what about the pay raises for the 1.6 million civil servants?
But she says that he's going to look into, I mean, he's going to relook at that. But then again, as the professor said, you know, we need to trim the budget in terms of expenditure for public sector expenses. And that's going to take time. And if you look at the GE results, I mean, the public voted Pakatan Harapan in, and the public includes the civil service. So perhaps, you know, if everyone has that common goal in mind, yeah, you know, if you want a better Malaysia, maybe short-term pain, long-term gain?
Or maybe a bit of a buyer's remorse already. Yeah, but we'll see. Yeah.
Well, you know, and this is very interesting, right? Because I think those who are supporting the Barisan Nasional, the previous administration, the politicians around it, are making that argument. And in fact, they're trying to stir up a kind of hysteria around this in order to undermine the current government. But that's part of the long, you know, longer conversation. But we have to go to a song. Now, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings with Better Things. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.